with to-go and catering available. For more info, go to I Love Home Foods or find them on Facebook. We're also made possible by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured, with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, non-human radio.
To look into what
officer elephant species like elephants because it was found that there was little accountability from the trusts then managing that hunting. Villagers did not benefit from the hunting quota, and the fees that the hunters were paying under that system, which is the system that prevails through the rest of Africa for a lot of big game hunting. The 2018 committee found that the ban had a negative impact on livelihoods, particularly for community-based organizations that were previously benefiting from hunting. It's an obvious conclusion. The 2018 committee included representatives from local authorities, non-governmental organizations, including some researchers and quote, industry representatives and others. The committee also found that the Department of Wildlife and National Parks of Botswana was taking too long to intervene and control destructive elephants, which can destroy a season's worth of crops in a single night. Elephants Without Borders Executive Director Mike Chase told National Geographic that it's possible to have a hunting quota that would actually have a negligible impact on the population, but that the international backlash would also have an impact that would undermine Botswana's economy and Botswana's reputation for being at the forefront of conservation. And I think there's a certain amount of outrage that accompanies that reversal. The Elephant Without Borders Executive Director Chase also empathizes with the communities facing the brunt of elephant damage that have advocated for the reinstatement of hunting. Drought also has caused the elephants to wander further in search of water, meaning that they're coming into contact with humans more often. And why do we have more drought? Ian Kama, who was the president of Botswana in 2014 when the ban was implemented, has criticized the move as purely political and intended to shore up rural voters ahead of the October presidential election in Botswana.
How many bad decisions are made in order to secure rural votes? I don't mean to make that as a dig against rural people who we are one, but it's playing to fears and playing to this and that. There's so many elephants that they're trampling through crops and villages. The hunting is not going to really stop that, you know. So
yes, it's unfortunate. I hope to be reporting maybe next week that the day after this show aired, there was a reversal once again. But we have to wait a couple of years on that. In the meanwhile, here in the United States, the Non-Human Rights Project is working to expand the legal definition of persons, as we've talked about, and they're trying to make the case that sentient beings are worthy of protection under existing laws. And today, all over the planet, non-human animals, of course, are treated as mere things under the law, incapable of possessing even a single right, despite growing scientific evidence that they have a rich emotional and social lives. And so one of the cases the Non-Human Rights Project is working on is the case of Happy the Elephant, who in November 2018 became the first elephant in the world to obtain a writ of habeas corpus, requiring a court to determine the lawfulness of her imprisonment at the Bronx Zoo. Just wanted to add that on as our main connection to elephants in the United States is these elephants in captivity.
Yeah, I mean, this issue and, you know, our local coyote issues, all these issues are, you know, kind of stem from, you know, a misunderstanding of what we call an ecosystem. You know, it's a system. It's not a linear, black and white thing. So, as humans living in this ecosystem with all these other animals and plants and land, like, it's not, there can't be, this is the farmer's land and this is the animal's land and this is the border and you shall not pass. Because that's not how it works. We have to have a way to integrate and not overconsume and not overtake land. But sure, if you try to build a farm in the midst of massive herd animals, traditional land, you can have a conflict.
And the difficulty now is that any old ecosystem boundaries are severely being eroded or expanded depending on climate change. So, you know, as the article intimated, actually spelled out, in a drought, when their grazing areas are changing and reduced, they're going to go for human dinner table.
Yep.
You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jamie Trezino and Fanny Thomas. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page, which is populated on a regular basis with such news. Over to you, David. Let's have our second news story of the day.
Yeah, Amsterdam has announced plans to serve vegetarian food by default at all catered events in government buildings starting next year. Meetings in the Dutch capital will be meat-free unless attendees specifically request otherwise. And Amsterdam is the capital city and most popular municipality of the Netherlands. I had to throw in some kind of Dutch. That's the best I can do. That initiative is called Carnivore. Let us know. And it was a proposal from council member Jonas van Lahameren of the Party for the Animals.
Right, they have a political party for animals, for animal-related issues.
The initial proposal made serving vegan food a standard, but this was considered a step too far in the dairy-loving Netherlands. The heads of Dutch operations and of animal welfare concerns jointly announced that though the Amsterdam Executive Council supported the underlying goal of the proposal, they determined that it was better to make the standard option vegetarian at first rather than vegan, and to focus the initiative on the individual's choice of whether to have meat or fish, and of course whether not to have meat and fish and cheese and eggs.
It's because evidently that's too complicated. The question is, I do think it's fascinating. I do think it's pretty cool to like overturn the norm. Mm-hmm. Like unless you specifically request otherwise, your meal is vegetarian.
I mean, I work out of the company's based out of San Francisco. I've been to lots of these large company events where they have money and there's sort of daily catering going on. It's just tremendous food waste to begin with. It's usually not all eaten. It's usually not all food people want. You know, my company had an event a couple weeks ago at a steakhouse, and I'm like, half of this company is vegetarian. You know, what are you guys doing? It didn't even occur to you to think about it. And like, oh, and then you don't even order off the menu because they're preparing a special menu as they do with catering, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, how much of this pre-prepared food is going to go to waste? Because some old white guy assumed everybody likes steak.
I think that the company conference, catered weddings, are a particular sort of torture for vegans especially, but also anyone who has a particular dietary choice.
And there's so much food waste at this thing. Anyway, you might as well, let's make it, less cruel. So, back to the Netherlands. The city's four coalition parties, which have the majority of seats, have adopted the proposal and have accepted it in full council vote in June. When the city's new caterer is selected, all catered events should serve veggie dogs, cheese balls, and vegetable snacks as default. Sounds yummy. An additional statement from the Amsterdam Council's executive committee said the vegetarian food service proposal would turn, quote, standard norms upside down. The question is no longer are you vegetarian, but do you eat meat or fish?
I think it's cool, too, because it brings the animal back into it. Well, meat doesn't, but fish does.
Right. When Utrecht announced that some council events would exclusively serve vegetarian food, the Liberal Party protested about having the right to choose. According to Dutch media, Liberal Party members were particularly exercised about the partial loss of the bitterbal, a deep-fried nugget of pulverized meat and white sauce.
It sounds so yummy.
That's the Liberal Party called part of its cultural heritage.
Right. About 15 generations of Dutch and eating the bitterbal. How dare we change that?
I think we would just call it a meatball and cream sauce or something. I mean, it might sound slightly better to people that eat meatballs and cream sauce. Mr. Lammeraren, the Party of the Animals Council member who proposed the idea, told the Telegraph newspaper that he thought there would be blowback in Amsterdam over the initiative, saying, quote, when we banned helium balloons a few years ago, a person from the Liberal Party ate a balloon to prove they weren't harmful. So I will be expecting some resistance when this comes to a full vote later this month.
I mean, like, nobody can make that up, right?
And by the way, helium balloons are terrible. Don't get that for your kids. Don't get that for parties. All they do is fly out and end up in the ocean and kill everything.
Even if we're in Chico. They end up in a creek, and then they end up in the ocean eventually.
All things flow to the sea. Like, that's an ancient expression, and it's true. It just takes time and wind. Water. Amsterdam is following in the steps of the National Dutch Education, Culture, and Science Ministry, which adopted the Vegetarian First rule late last year in coordination with the Dutch National Institute for Public Health and the Environment, which has in recent years repeatedly called for citizens to eat less red and processed meats to improve their health and reduce their environmental impact.
Hear, hear. So do you want to hear more about this party for the animals?
Yeah.
So it's a political party in the Netherlands. It's also a political party throughout Europe. Its main goals are animal rights and animal welfare. It considers itself what is called a testimonial party. So it doesn't seek short-term interests of man in a pivotal position, but instead puts the entire planet and all our inhabitants ahead of that. It's a part of a global and growing movement that is committed to the interest of animals, nature, and environment in politics and public administration. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. I mean, that's kind of the theme, I think, of the show, because you set up a good thing, as you always do. The previous article, it's not, we shouldn't be putting man ahead of animals or animals ahead of man. It's got to be an ecosystem. It's got to be a partnership.
I just want to say, too, because we're coming up to some a sustainability task force meeting here for the Chico City Council coming up this week. The Dutch Party for the Animals has been declared the most climate-friendly Dutch party in the European Parliament by the Climate Action Network Europe. Over the past 5 years, the Party for the Animals has gained the highest number of votes on plans considering climate protection, making it the Dutch climate champion in Brussels, according to the Climate Action Network. The Climate Action Network in Europe consists of other NGOs like Greenpeace, Miracle Luna, the Sierra Club, and other environmental organizations. So I think that's pretty cool. I think we'll probably be covering that party a little bit more, maybe comparing it to the U.S. version of an animal party, which is the Humane Party. All right, you've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. Our last news story is from the group, an organization called the Oxpecker Center for Investigative Environmental Journalism. It's a group based in Africa which conducts investigative journalism on environmental issues. We've been talking a lot about wild horses in the last couple of episodes. We've talked about the wild horses up in Modoc County. We talked about the unusual hand-holding between the ASPCA and HSUS and the Bureau of Land Management regarding its wild horse policies in the United States. So I was really intrigued to see this story about this wild horse issue in Namibia. And it's a little complicated, but I think it's fascinating. The group Oxpeckers reported on a long-running battle between desert-dwelling wild horses and hyenas, which share a single water point in the arid South Namibian desert in the National Park of Namibia, which is in the southern part of the African continent, just adjacent to South Africa. The wild horse population in the park reached a crisis point recently as horse numbers plummeted from a herd of about 286 to only 77 remaining animals. The Namibia Wild Horses Foundation warned in early February 2019 that we are now in the final hour of the wild horses' existence on the planet. It called on the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, the MET, which is the custodian of both the hyenas and the horses, to take immediate action to save the horses from extinction. As it turns out, the only remaining foal in this herd was attacked and wounded by hyenas very recently, with gruesome images of the attack circulating on social media, as they do. Two attempts to catch and relocate the hyenas have proved futile, prompting the MET to shoot three hyenas, including a female hyena, thought to be the main cause of foal mortalities. While horse lovers across the globe cheered, environmentalists condemned the interference, which appears to be contradicting its own tourism and wildlife policies by advocating removal of the hyenas from the national park. Spotted hyenas are classified as vulnerable and are therefore a conservation priority in Namibia, said the Namibian Environmental and Wildlife Society in a statement. That's their equivalent of a SERPA. The organization said killing or translocating the spotted hyenas would only temporarily reduce predation on the feral horses until new hyenas fill the gap left by the removed animals, similar to coyote issue. The exact number of horses killed by the hyenas is also debatable, as drought and disease also account for mortalities, the environmental organization said. The shooting of the hyenas raises the question, to what extent do conservation authorities intervene in a situation between endemic wildlife and feral animals? The situation is unprecedented, and all parties are feeling their way around how to deal with it. We're seeing this over and over, right? Specifically, this is wild horses, but we see it in the Australian campaign to exterminate all feral cats by dropping poison over great swaths of Australian hinterlands. These are important issues for us to think about. I think a lot of these decisions are not being made with any kind of public input. And although the public can't necessarily weigh in one-on-one, I think that the public can evaluate the friends, family group structures that struggle against ailments have endeared them to millions of horse lovers. And if your group is a horse crazy kid like me, you would read about Black Beauty, you would read about the Black Stallion, you would read about Misty from the ponies on Chincoteague. So there are stray horses all over the world. So they are a rugged critter. These horses are also happen to be one of Southern Namibia's most lucrative tourist attractions, providing a vital lifeline for residents in a couple of towns in Namibia. And with only about 50 wild horse populations overall left worldwide, and very, very few in deserts, their survival is viewed as imperative. The horses, although feral, have defied odds of survival in the harsh desert environment, where there's a lack of grazing, there's years and decades of inbreeding, and now a dependence on a single watering hole. In contrast, the hyenas are portrayed in literature, folklore, and films as evil and linked to witchcraft. An analysis of social media posts last year showed that up to 85% voted in favor of the horse. So if you're given a choice between which do you like better, the horse or the hyena, most people pick the horses. It's just really interesting, the dynamic here. It's so different from MODOK, right, where the dichotomy is horse versus cow. And even though most people probably would pick the horse, over the wild horse, over the cow, our politics and our system of, as we've said it many times before, grazing entitlements skew that even public perception of the horse. Commentators claiming that the hyenas were moved in by local environmental groups. Literature and sightings show that hyenas have always existed in the area, although in lower densities. The reasons for the escalating conflict are complex. Hyenas and other carnivores were virtually exterminated by farmers in the early 20th century. Changes in land use from livestock farming to wildlife-friendly tourism and the declaration of the Namibian National Park made the area more carnivore-friendly. Previously, hyenas had access to water leaking from a pipeline that stretches across the desert to a town in Namibia. But better water maintenance means that the only available water now is at the single watering hole. And drought is obviously a big factor in this conflict. With an annual average rainfall of just 4 inches, both horses and hyenas are in a continuous battle for survival, made worse because there has been essentially no rainfall between 2012 and 2018. Climate change is expected to cause more frequent and longer droughts, of course. In 1992, when a severe drought hit, the Ministry of Environment and Tourism took action and sold off 104 horses to local buyers, unspecified where any of those were, for auction or for kill buyers.
Right.
Since then, populations have yo-yoed, increasing to 286 animals in 2010 following exceptional rains. And I imagine if you looked at wild horse populations across the western U.S., you'd see similar fluctuations depending on rainfall. It's just extraordinary to me, though, that their environmental group actually took action on these, regarding these non-native wild animals in their national park. And the article goes on, the presence of hyenas was initially welcomed as a natural control measure, as the carrying capacity of the land was estimated to be 250 horses. But when oryx and springbok, which are a type of gazelle and antelope, moved in elsewhere in search of grazing, the hyenas were natural prey. These animals are the more natural prey for hyenas. The hyenas stay put. They do what hyenas do in a natural environment. They seek out the sick, the old, and the newborn among the horses. According to Dr. Tolani Grayling, who is considered the foremost authority on Namibian horses, hyenas killed 100 horses, half of those foals, in 2013. And apart from the recently injured foal, no other foals have survived over the past 5 years. And the youngest animal in the herd is now 7 years old. And this is what gets the horse lovers all in a state of anxiety, because this is an aging population of horses. Initially, the Namibian Ministry of Environment and Tourism kept to a policy of non-interference regarding wildlife in national parks. However, it authorized a program to feed both horses and hyenas, but this simply kept the hyenas in the area and actually strengthened their numbers. They even moved their den closer to the horses. These are hard problems to solve.
Yeah.
as horse numbers declined, the Namibia Wild Horses Foundation appealed for custodianship over them, outlining plans to move the horses to a safer home on commercial farmland. Environmentalists generally supported this proposal. But the Namibian Ministry of Environment and Tourism has refused to renounce the custodianship of the horses, citing, of course, their tourism as well as their ecological and natural heritage value. Recently, the Namibian Ministry of Environment and Tourism announced the development of what they call the Wild Horse Action Plan in consultation with stakeholders. It includes predator management, water provision, tourism development, feeding, and a long-term horse management plan. With few international lessons to emulate, there is no clear answer about how to manage horses and hyenas in harmony. So, yeah, I just think it's a complicated story. Hopefully, I've outlined the players involved here. Every situation where wild animals are put in conflict with beloved animals, one of those species is going to lose out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the background to comment too much on the environment in Africa, but, as this story is driven by climate change, the thing to remember is that you don't get time to make good decisions sometimes with climate change. Sometimes in 5 years, everything's dead, and it's, now is the time. Now is always the time to start planning and working on solving these things and doing your studies and your data. Sounds like they're like, oh, no, they've got a bad problem. They don't have a lot of horses left. They're studying the problem, How many horses are left next year?
And yet they're rejecting the offer to remove those horses and put them in safer space because they're, who knew? They were such a tourism.
Touristing economic benefit. We don't want them to move. We'll keep them here. Well, they'll continue to decline. It's not a logic driving it, but I don't also know the answers.
Well, hopefully we'll do some kind of update in a year or two, for good or for ill.
Do you know in these sorts of situations if it was two, this is feral versus a native, if it was two natives, animals eating each other that were endangered, then what are you going to do?
I think
nature take its course.
Most environmental stewards do that, So, clearly a lot of manipulation and involvement here with the supplying of the food and the water.
Right.
And the initial system that allowed these horses to thrive for all these decades was a leaky water system.
That was the hyenas, I guess, then probably when it was all farmland and not national park, the farmers probably killed all the hyenas. Yeah. So.
Okay. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZR 90.1 FM. Listeners supported Community Radio, hosted by Jeannie Prisino and Dan Toms. And now we have just a couple items on the calendar of events coming up. Plant-Based Chica will be meeting tomorrow, Thursday, May 3rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Guild Hall at 2775 Old Nord Avenue. Tomorrow's meeting will be a back-to-basics plant-based lifestyle class covering basic how-tos. Friday, May 31st, we have the 5th Friday Vegan Celebration, the first one, hosted by Chico Natural Foods from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Chico Natural Foods will be hosting its 5th Friday Vegan Celebration. They'll be having a vegan cookout for lunch and for dinner with Beyond Burgers and Beyond Brats and potato salad and samples of vegan grilled cheese sandwiches and other things like that. All right, that is all I have for the calendar. If you have an event to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. We have one last piece of business to close out today's show, and that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from the Native Hill